Welcome to This is Type 1, real-life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. I'm Colleen Mitchell, and I've had type 1 diabetes for 23 years. By day, I'm a process analyst in the power industry, and by night, I'm an author, blogger, and virtual assistant. I'm passionate about type 1 diabetes education and showing others that this disease doesn't define me.
I'm Jesse Tuggy, and I've had type 1 for 7 years. I love hiking and painting, and I'm looking forward to working as an engineer after college. My diagnosis has inspired me to take control of my future and learn everything I can about it.
Each week on the show, we'll talk about real life with type 1 diabetes, bring on cool people with connections to type 1, and above all, encourage you to understand that this disease doesn't have to hold you back. This isn't medical advice. This is life with type 1. Welcome to episode 17 of This is Type 1, real life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. Today, Jesse is back, and we're talking about emergency and backup kits for type 1 diabetics. Welcome back, Jesse.
Hi guys, I'm super happy to be back, and thank you for letting me have some time to deal with, you know, some personal matters that I had to do, but thank you.
Of course. Welcome back. So a quick reminder for our audience, so if you have any questions about type 1 diabetes, please leave us a comment on the show notes, and you can find those at inspiredforward.com/episode17, or just give us an email at colleen@inspiredforward.com. We will answer listener questions in future episodes.
So let's get started with our wins, our fails, and our hacks of the week. Colleen is up first with our win.
So this is actually kind of a really small win in the midst of really bad circumstances. We'll discuss this more on next week's episode, but stress is a major driver of blood sugar. And as of this recording, I've been under quite a lot of stress for the last 3 weeks because of a death in my immediate family. And even though stress like that wreaks havoc on the entire body, my blood sugars have been generally okay. I don't really look at this as a quote-unquote win, but it's one less thing to worry about when there are some days that it's just a struggle to get out of bed, or I wake up and I forget what day it is. So there's that.
Yeah, and that happens. I mean, it's okay to have those small little wins out of, you know, some bad things that happen.
Yep. As long as I don't have to, you know, waste time thinking about my blood sugar, I'm happy.
True.
Happy-ish.
Yes. Yes. That's the positive side.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, Jesse, you are up for a fail. What's your fail?
To give a little background, I just started working my first job this September, which is also kind of why I took a little break doing the show, because I was getting so stressed out and overwhelmed with starting school back up again and starting a new job. So I work retail. I'm a cashier, and this is a big learning curve for me because I'm realizing how valuable my CGM is and everything. So for my fail, I wasn't exactly wearing my CGM site during work one day because it was charging at home. So I tested my blood sugar beforehand, before work, and my levels were fine at 180 or so, so I wasn't worried about it. It was just in the back of my head. But after an hour or so, I felt my blood sugar going down a lot really quickly. So when I realized that, I had to run away from my post, grab a candy bar from one of our displays, and then I had to open it, eat it, and keep checking out customers. So it was quite an experience, and I realized that I either needed to carry snacks in my work vest or have them at my desk, because I can't go through something like that again where I have to run, tell my boss, and then get back to the cashiering and customers. It looked really unprofessional on my part and looked like I was unprepared. So that's my little fail of the week.
I think, didn't we talk about in a previous episode where you would have a fanny pack when you're walking around the floor?
Yes, I tried that, and then it didn't work out so well because it kept like falling down my waist.
Okay.
Because it was so heavy and I had to do so much running around.
Okay.
Even cashiering, it was really hard when they transferred me. So I haven't quite figured out a system yet, but I'm working on it. It's a lot of trial and error at the moment.
Okay. Well, at least you're figuring it out.
Yes. And that's the important part, is like I'm figuring out, I'm doing what I need to do.
There you go.
Which leads into my hack.
Nice segue.
Yes, is to always have snacks at work with you, whether in your locker, whether in your work uniform, in your pants pocket. I don't care. You need to have your snacks. And also, don't be afraid to ask your bosses for a break because you feel like your blood sugar is going low or you need a test. I notice that I struggle with this big time when it comes to certain bosses or certain leads that I work with because they don't understand quite as much what the consequences could be if I didn't eat.
So you could just tell them, you know, if I don't eat this, I'll die.
That's true. But then they're like, okay, but you could still work while you ate it. No, I really can't. Like, yeah, I really, really can't. But that's something I learned a lot, was how to ask for breaks and be like, hey, my blood sugar's low, or even call it out on the radio. I had to have a meeting with almost everyone in the store where I was like, hey, I'm diabetic. I'm just letting everybody know. So in case you hear me saying I need a break, I really do need a break. It's not necessarily I'm just not dealing with the customer right, or I'm overwhelmed. It's that it's medical and it's important.
So yeah. That's actually a really good thing to talk about, because I used to work for Mayflower, the moving company, and moving boxes and packing stuff makes my number like drop a lot.
Yeah.
So I had to make sure that all the people on my team that I was working with that day, because it changed every day, that they knew I had type 1 diabetes and that I would most likely be going in and out from the truck to like snarf something down to bring that my blood sugar back up. And numerous times I went out to the truck and my number was like 50 and I had to bring it back up. And this was before CGMs for me.
Exactly.
So it's, and, yeah.
And it's just also a learning experience, because I know more so now how important my CGM is to me, how valuable that piece of technology is. And like, I kind of been taking it for granted more so than I realized.
If I had to choose between my insulin pump and my CGM, I would keep my CGM.
Yes.
Yeah. I agree with that's you. How important it is. For all y'all listening, that's how important a CGM is.
Preach it, Colleen. Preach it.
And your hack actually kind of goes pretty well with the episode, which we will dive into now.
Yes. So for our episode, as we've mentioned in a couple of episodes previous to this, it's always important for type 1 diabetics to carry extra supplies and be prepared. Today, we're going to talk about different places to keep kits, where to store them, and how often you should switch supplies to make sure nothing expires before you use it and need it, even though you can use expired supplies if you got nothing else.
The most obvious place to keep supplies is at home. And this doesn't seem like a place to keep emergency and backup supplies since it's, you know, home, but I wanted to start this list off with a reminder to have a single location where you keep all your diabetes supplies that you use regularly. You don't want to have them all over the house and be running between 3 or 4 different spots just to gather all the things you need to do a site change or a sensor change. It can be a dedicated drawer or a cabinet, a shelf in a closet, a tub under the bed, or whatever works for you. My supplies are all inside the office walk-in closet on a shelf. I have my stacks of infusion sites, cartridges, and sensors, and then there's a basket off to the right with everything else in it. And my insulin is all in the bottom drawer of the mini fridge, which is also in the office. So I have one place for everything.
That's good. So for me, it's a little different because my parents are divorced. I'm completely open with it. I'm fine with talking about it. But so for my mom's house, I have a box of supplies. I actually have 2 boxes of supplies, excuse me. One for CGM stuff and the other for Neos and reservoirs. And then in my desk drawer, I keep all of my goodies and my snacks. So then when I'm sitting and I feel myself going low, I can just grab and eat. Or if my blood sugar is low in the middle of the night, I can just grab something, eat it, and go back to sleep if it's safe to.
So I forgot to mention that all of my low snacks are not in one spot. They are scattered everywhere.
Yes, that was my next point. So I also keep snacks everywhere in the house. I keep them in my room, some in my mom's room, even a couple in our bathroom, just in case, like, I'm showering and I'm like, oh, great, I'm low. What do I do?
That's well, a good you dry point. Off.
Yes.
That's a good point, because showering actually will lower your blood sugar if you're already low enough and the water is warm enough, because the heat makes your blood sugar drop, which is great.
It does. It's crazy. Like, you get home and you're like, oh, I want a nice warm shower. And then all of a sudden you're 62. And I'm like, what happened? All I wanted was a shower.
Yeah.
So yeah, I keep low snacks everywhere, but I keep reservoirs and Mios in my room. And then I keep insulin either in the fridge or on my desk if it's low enough and I know I'm going to use it right away. And then moving on to school, since I'm the only one in school, this is going to be just from my perspective at the moment. So I'm an independent diabetic at school, meaning I don't need to check in with the nurses and the nurses don't need to check in with me. The only reason that I would go to the nurse if I ran low on snacks and I forgot them in my backpack, or if I needed to change my site because my reservoir was at 0. I don't change my site necessarily in the class, but I go to the bathroom instead and just pop it on really fast, and then I'll go back to class and keep learning.
Okay. Well, you are the only one currently in school, but I have gone through school. So I will share my perspective too. when I was in elementary, my teachers had all of Milo snacks in their bottom desk drawer. It was on like one or the other side of their desk. And my mom actually worked in the school office, so she kept all of my other supplies with her there. And if I ever needed anything, all I had to do was walk down to the office to see my mom, or a teacher would walk with me. And funny story, the lowest blood sugar I've ever had consciously was 26. And that happened when I was in elementary school, and the principal walked me from the classroom to my mom. So I was like conscious and walking with my blood sugar at 26.
That's crazy.
Oh yeah. It's my favorite story about elementary school.
That's insane.
And for high school, it was a little bit similar. All of my teachers had my low snacks, and they also had my pump supplies in their bottom desk drawers. So I had like one site change per teacher in there. But the responsibility for telling them that I needed it fell to me. So I would have to like raise my hand in class and say, I need to like get something from your bottom desk drawer, and they would be fine with it. But I also went to a private high school, so we didn't have a school nurse, and it was a lot more close-knit. So I knew the teachers a little bit more personally than I otherwise would have. So high school was kind of the start of me really doing everything by myself. And then in college, I always had low snacks on me, but I pretty much left my supplies back in my dorm because it was pretty close. I could walk back or drive back fairly quickly if I needed to do a site change. And I probably should have, in retrospect, kept some site changes with me just in case, because if I needed to stay longer on campus and I didn't want to, you know, go back and forth from the apartment just to keep working on things, and I should have kept it with me. So that's a good tip for Jesse, who's going off to college in the next couple of years. Keep supplies with you at all times.
Yes, ma'am. One thing I would like to add when going to school with diabetes is, when you're low or you feel like you're shaky and you go to a school that has stairs, please make sure somebody walks you down those, or I don't know, use a public elevator or something. But I almost tripped and like cracked my head open trying to walk down when I was low. And I decided to just go to my next class instead of going to the nurse. So please be careful with stairs and always have someone walk with you when they can.
That is a really good tip.
Yes, it's not. It was horrifying.
I can imagine. Okay, so the next place to keep supplies is work, so your workplace. Jesse talked about her retail job earlier, but I work in a corporate setting, and my supplies at work are kind of twofold. I have a complete site change baggie in one of my desk drawers, and that includes an insulin vial. And my backpack has another complete site change, along with a bag of syringes, just in case I'm experiencing issues with my pump. And that pack also has a complete vial of insulin. So in the same desk drawer at work, I've got a box full of Smarties. So, you know, there's my low snacks. And in addition to that, I also have a whiteboard in my cubicle, and it says I have type 1 diabetes on it. So all of my coworkers know that I have type 1, and nobody has any issues if I need to step out of a meeting or retrieve a Smartie roll to correct or catch a low. And a lot of the times, if I'm going into a meeting and I notice on my phone that my number is going down or it's starting to trend down, I'll just slip a Smartie roll in my pocket and take it with me. And then, you know, if I pull it out in the middle of a meeting with my boss, I'll be like, oh, you're low.
No, for me, it's a little bit different because I'm still learning how to work with my diabetes and stay on my feet at the same time. One trick that I've noticed is that I really need to eat before I go on a 4.5-hour shift when I know I'm only going to get a 15-minute break and I don't have time to eat. Colleen's nodding her head like I should know this already.
I know you learn by experience.
I do. For me, it's just easier if I know what to prepare for. In this case, I really don't know quite yet, but I'm getting there. So I do keep snacks in my locker, and I bring in my kit with me, which is in my purse, and then I'll leave like my bigger backpack in my truck under a blanket, safe where no one can see it. But I haven't quite figured out the best system for when I'm on the floor, either checking people out or helping them into clothing or dressing room or something. But a bunch of it is trial and error, since I work for a more conservative retail store, I guess you could say, where they don't necessarily like to advertise to the public about who has medical needs and who doesn't. So they usually like to have me kind of conceal it a little bit, which is okay with me. I can understand that. I mean, some of the stuff that diabetics work with is actually, you know, pretty intense for some people. So I don't mind that so much, but I always try and keep snacks with me, which is one thing I'm learning a lot this year.
It's a good thing to learn.
Yeah. Apparently it's important too. All right, moving on to cars. So I also recently just got a truck. So this is also a learning experience for me too. As I mentioned in a previous episode, I have a toolbox actually in the back of my truck that has reservoirs, Mios, test strips, syringes, glucagon, gummy snacks, galore. It basically has everything but insulin in it, just because I don't like to have prescription medicine in my truck when I know I might not use it or need it anytime soon.
Your glucagon isn't there?
Yes.
Isn't glucagon prescription still?
Yes, but it can last up to a year, where insulin could, you know,
only last up to a month. Does it need to be refrigerated?
Nope.
What glucagon do you have?
It's the regular, like
the red box?
Like the red plastic casing. Yeah. Mine doesn't need to be refrigerated.
Oh, I thought it had to be refrigerated.
No, I've never had mine refrigerated.
We've always just thrown it in the cheese drawer.
No.
Oh, learn something new every day.
And I do know, this will be cool to hear, there are some glucagons that my friend actually is on the trial for, where all you have to do is just put it in your nostril and squeeze.
Is that the Baqsimi?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one of our diabetes in the news like a couple episodes ago. I don't remember if you were on for that one.
Probably not. Anyway,
back to cars.
Yes, back to trucks and cars. Colleen's been driving longer than I have, so she has more experience than I do.
Don't remind me. I've been driving for like 10 years now.
Yeah, I've been only driving for about 3 months.
Well, you're doing a very good job, as you know, I haven't seen it, but you haven't had any problems, so I'm guessing you're doing a good job.
Hopefully. I mean, it's a stick shift, so I gotta be gentle.
So my husband and I have two cars, but I honestly don't keep a full complement of supplies in either of them, because I always have my backpack or a purse, and those have the supplies or the low snacks in them. I do keep a couple of rolls of Smarties in a little pocket that's just below the dashboard, so that if I do go low while I'm driving, I don't have to mess with my backpack for it. And then I also have a little magnetic phone holder on one of my vents, and my phone is usually plugged into the auxiliary cord. So if I get a low or a high alert while I'm driving, it interrupts whatever I'm listening to, which is usually a podcast, and it beeps really loudly through the car speakers. So if I feel my pump vibrate for an alert before it goes through the car, I can hit the power button and turn off the really, really loud sound that comes through the car, because that sometimes really scares me.
Oh my gosh. Well, at least you know you're low.
Yeah. Yeah. I can usually feel the lows, but it's nice sometimes to get the alert while I'm driving. So because I keep everything in my backpack, the next thing to talk about is backpacks, purses, and bags. And my backpack is the place where my supplies live for a lot of places that I go. I have a backpack that has this really cool bottom compartment, and it has enough space to hook a small black bag that fits my checker kit, a full sight change, and a little bag of syringes. And in that same bottom compartment, I also have a small pouch that's just stuffed with Smarties. The only thing I don't regularly carry is a sensor change, because I'm on the Dexcom G6 sensor. It's enormous, and I only have to change them every 10 days. I've kind of given up on trying to figure out how to restart the new transmitters, because it always seems to fail. But if I have to go a few hours without sensor readings, I'm not really bothered, because I'll have my checker kit with me anyway.
There you go. So for me, it's a little bit different. Depending where I'm going is what I base, how much I carry, what I carry in what bag. So in my regular purse, I carry fruit snacks and my kit. And that's usually for like work. If I'm going to be around, you know, other diabetics or other places where I know I have supplies and I know I have access to them. But I usually carry everything in my truck, like reservoir, a Mio changeout, when it's just day-to-day things. So like I'm going to the mall and I'm hanging out with some friends, or I'm just going to go get dinner or something with someone. And then for longer distance trips, like either road trip or I know I'm going to be gone for a day, like a whole day, I'll carry everything with me. Mio, reservoir, syringes, maybe some insulin, just depending on where I'm going. But usually it's more than I usually would carry, rather than going to work. But moving on from that to our bags, we're going to talk about our friends' or family's houses. So mine's a little bit different, because as I mentioned before, my parents are divorced. So with my mom's house, I have everything spread out where I want it to be. And then I have my two boxes and my nightstand for snacks. When it comes to my dad's house, he's the one who has most control over where he puts everything, which is okay with me, because as long as I know where it is, as long as I know how much I have, it doesn't really matter where it goes. So his stuff usually is in our closet hallway. And then I'll keep like the stuff that I know I'm going to be needing over the next couple of days in our kitchen, like insulin, reservoirs, Mio's, in our kitchen drawers. And then low snacks I'll put in my room for when I go low at night, or I'll put them in the kitchen. So that's usually where I'm hanging out, so I can just grab and go.
My parents had some old supplies of mine for a while before I became really fully independent. But now whenever I stay over at my mom's house, I bring my change of supplies with me in my backpack, you know, because it's my backpack. But for those of you who are in college or you visit home or your friends regularly and often, it might be a good idea to leave a set of supplies there in case you make like an unexpected visit or you forget your regular bag or you forget to replenish your supply after you use it.
I agree. Always have backups where
Always have backups, normally.
Yeah.
So Jesse mentioned when she was talking about her backpack situation about going on longer trips or day trips and things like that. So this next section we're going to talk about is going to events, theme parks, or day trips and parties. So none of us want to lug a huge bag around with all our supplies in it to events, theme parks, parties, or even on day trips. But these situations are when, you know, Murphy's Law strikes, whatever can go wrong will go wrong, and you wish that you had brought your backups. A single site change, syringes, a vial of insulin, and some extra test strips are, in my opinion, the bare minimum to bring with you. A backpack or a bigger purse with enough space for your backup supplies is fine to bring to all of these places. Event or park security in particular might check your bags. And if they have any questions, you can just tell them you're type 1 diabetic. Saying this has actually let me keep my water bottle in places that otherwise would have prohibited bringing your own drinks in. So that's cool. Theme parks like Disney, Universal Studios, and water parks, they all have lockers where you can store your things while you go on rides or play in the tide pool. And if you don't want to bring a site change to a party, you'll have to consider a few things. How far away from home will you be? Are you going with someone who can drive you home if you feel too sick to drive? How long has your site been in? How much insulin do you have left? Are you comfortable knowing that if your site fails when you're out, you will have to go home immediately? So this is especially important with the upcoming holiday parties. I know that for my company Christmas party, I will be bringing like a small purse and I will have my checker and a thing of test strips, but I won't be bringing anything else because I'm going to plan ahead to not have to change my sensor and not have to change my site while I'm there.
Yes. For me, when it comes to day trips, I'll bring everything with me, including batteries, syringes, and like very emergency-like or unprepared things. And I'll leave the bigger things in my car or my parents' car or a friend's car and just be like, hey, I need to leave this in here. I know we're only going to be like a 10-minute walk from here, but it's really important that I have this in here. And you know, friends are cool with that as long as you're safe and as long as you're healthy, it's okay.
When you said batteries, that actually reminded me that I've completely forgotten to talk about all of the charging stuff because I just charge my pump in the morning when I'm in the shower. So for all of this stuff, if you're going overnight, take your charger or take batteries because you don't want to end up with a low battery and not have any way to change it.
We almost had to call 911 one time because I forgot a battery and we went to Ocean Shores on New Year's Eve.
Your mom talked about that in episode 8.
Yes, she did. Doesn't let me live it down. But yeah, that's just one example of how unprepared situations can lead to detrimental consequences. But definitely either bring 2 bags, leave one in your car with you, bring 1 bag and have everything that you need with it in there, or bring another bag and have everything you think you might need in there and leave your separate one in the car. The biggest thing that I would say is just make sure you have enough insulin and you have enough low snacks in your kit as well. Those are the 3 most important things that I could possibly think of that you would need. But with that, if you're going on longer trips, maybe a day, maybe a couple of days, basically all traveling, bring everything. And I cannot stress this enough. No matter how far away you're going, please bring everything, whether it's an hour drive, a 3-hour drive, a 2-day trip, bring one of everything because if you forget a battery at home, you might need to call 911 on New Year's Eve. So like for me, I'll bring needles, syringes, extra insulin, couple of Mio's, a couple of reservoirs, my CGM charger, my CGM change out site, stickers, snacks, batteries.
All of the things.
All of the things, just everything. if you have a specific diabetic purse or diabetic bag, make sure you have twice as much stuff as you think you might need. Make a list if you have to and check it off one by one. I do that for long trips. I have it saved to my computer where I can just print it out and highlight what I am bringing.
So I talked more about traveling with type 1 diabetes in episode 11, but as Jesse is saying, the gist of it is to bring 1.5 to 2 times the amount of supplies you'll need for when you're gone. I always pack things in a hard shell container, which is actually an old sensor box. And I also bring like Smarties stuffed everywhere in my bags. I also usually bring about 2 vials of insulin for domestic trips. It's like to the East Coast when I'm flying. So I'll bring 2 vials of insulin. And then when I went to Europe in 2014, I actually pre-filled my Medtronic reservoirs with insulin to reduce the amount of space that my supplies took up. So that was pretty helpful.
That's smart.
I came up with that all on my own.
That's like really, really smart.
I might end up doing it for a trip to Scotland next year too.
Yeah, definitely.
So moving on to emergency supplies. Well, emergencies include your house burning down. You need to go somewhere immediately. Something catastrophic has happened and you need to bug out of town without packing up all your stuff. Things like that. It's actually on my to-do list to pack up some emergency quote-unquote go bags that we can just grab when leaving the apartment and know that we have everything we need inside. This is really standard practice for emergency preparation, but as diabetics, we also have to remember to bring our supplies, including enough insulin to last through the emergency. Since it's difficult to estimate how long you'll be gone, I'd bring enough to last a month at least. And if you haven't been hoarding supplies or you don't have good enough insurance to kind of have a little surplus, you can keep one of the boxes of sites/reservoirs/sensors in your emergency go bag and then just use them as the last set before your next shipment comes.
And then for me, it's a little different because I haven't quite put as much thought into it as I should have or should be doing.
Your mom should be thinking about this.
Yes, but we have thought about this before, to where if one house either burns down or gets destroyed, then the other house always has a like toolbox full of a month's worth of supplies. Like we have everything in there at one of the houses at all times. So I do have some prepared, but not as much as I would like to.
Keep in mind that we also live in Washington State, in Western Washington, and when the big Cascadia earthquake hits, which is going to send Seattle into the water, it won't matter which house is still standing because actually neither of them will be still standing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so got to have your own emergency bag.
Yeah, time to go find a new spot for something.
Also kind of tacked on to emergency is disaster or shelter in place. As I just mentioned, earthquakes on the West Coast and sometimes hurricanes on the East Coast mean that we have to shelter in place during a disaster scenario. These situations are when we absolutely want to have enough emergency supplies in the house to tide us through the disaster. And this is also not just diabetic supplies, but food, water, other medications, pet food, things like that. This is another reason why having all of your supplies in one place is really helpful, so you're not risking yourself by having things scattered all over the house or the apartment and not being able to find something when you need it. And that brings us to keeping insulin cool. So keeping insulin cool without refrigeration is kind of a big deal for disasters, emergencies, and even travel, especially through hot places. There are several solutions out there, and one that immediately comes to mind is the Frio brand. They make pouches with water-activated cooling technology. There's other brands out there, but that's just the one that popped into my head. And you can also keep insulin cold with just regular ice packs or ice from a convenience store or a hotel ice machine. What you don't want to do ever is freeze insulin. That will destroy it, and then you won't have any insulin left to use. And then your emergency preparedness plans are just out the window. When growing up, we used an ice pack specifically designed to hold 2 insulin vials, and it was actually kind of cool. It came with a little insulated sleeve to hold it, and that's what we brought on trips into theme parks when I was younger. While keeping insulin cool is really important, it's also important to know that manufacturers say that it's okay to keep insulin at room temperature for up to 28 days, as long as it's in less than 86 degrees in the surrounding environment. My pump is against my skin all day, every day, and I notice that my insulin loses its potency starting at the tail end of day 3 into day 4. If your insulin is cloudy, that's when it's time to change vials. Otherwise, you'll just have to use a bit more of it to get the same result when using older insulin or insulin that may have been in high temperatures for a couple of days.
And then for me, I actually bought a diabetes insulin cooler off of Amazon a couple of years ago. It's been a lifesaver ever since. Unfortunately, it only holds 1 vial at a time, but I am getting more of them for summer trips and trips that might have me go a week or two out of the way and that I need to bring more insulin for. even on trips, sometimes I'll just leave the insulin out and put it in a baggie and call it good. Although I do not recommend that as, and I only use that as a last resort if we are on the road and we can't find water for another 20 miles. So make sure it stays cold. If it's out for a couple of hours, if it's out for a couple of days, it's not going to matter too much. And as I've said before, I'll even keep a vial of used insulin on my desk if it's just a couple of days from going bad, and I'll just have it out there anyways and then use the last of it. Colleen does the same thing.
Yeah, I just keep whatever insulin vial I'm currently using on my desk until I'm done using it. I don't put it back in the fridge.
Right. I mean, it's always nice to have that cold bottle of insulin ready to go for you, but...
Cold insulin is actually more likely to have bubbles.
That's true. It is. But it also kind of hurts more when you put it in as well, just saying. Because you can
insulin?
Feel it. Yeah. Cause
well, yeah, then don't use then cold don't, insulin when yeah. you're doing that.
Anyways, it's okay to have your insulin out for a couple of days, as long as it's not too hot and you don't freeze it beforehand. And then, moving on, segue, rotating supplies to avoid expirations, which in this case could be insulin on your desk. It's important to make sure all of your backup and emergency kits don't have supplies that are expired. I know it's probably going to take a while to have enough extra supplies to always have your kits stocked. Just make sure you're aware of expiration dates and have a calendar or a reminder set up to keep rotating those supplies before they go expired. That being said, it's okay to use expired supplies. You just have to be careful about results. And then expired insulin might lose its potency, meaning it might not work as well, or it might not work at all. Expired sensors and test strips might have inaccurate readings, and expired site changes and reservoirs might not last as long.
It's a good idea to keep a checklist of where your supplies are located and when they need to change out. And if that sounds too complicated to create on your own, check out the show notes for a downloadable PDF backup kit expiration tracker.
Replenishing supplies once you use them. The worst thing is using backup kit and then forgetting to refill it for the next emergency you have. Whenever you use your backup kit, put it on your to-do list or make a note to replenish it ASAP. And don't forget to update the expiration tracker that you might have. This happens a lot because it's an emergency and you often don't think about those emergencies beforehand until they actually happen. So this is actually a very important reminder for a lot of teenagers out there.
So that wraps up the bulk of our episode, and now it's time to move on to our diabetes in the news segment. So we've talked a couple times on the podcast about time in range, which is a metric that's a better indicator of overall control than the A1C. Diatribe just published an article called Benefits of Time in Range: New Study Shows Cost Savings. Here's an excerpt from the article on Diatribe. IQVIA, a healthcare consulting firm, published a 22-page paper describing the limitations of A1C and the potential financial benefits of improving time in range, the time a person spends with blood glucose levels between 70 and 180 mgdL. The paper was actually sponsored by Lilly Diabetes. The paper predicts that if the average time in range for people with diabetes in the US increases to 70% or 80%, healthcare costs will be reduced. The savings could be up to $9.7 billion for the US healthcare system over 10 years if the average time in range for people with diabetes is increased to 80%. This is pretty significant, especially with the national conversation about the price of insulin. And here's another excerpt from further down the article. Unsurprisingly, the biggest reductions in healthcare costs were seen in people with high baseline A1Cs. While a 5% increase in time in range for a person with an A1C under 7% would only save about $20 over 10 years, the same 5% increase in time in range for a person with an A1C over 8% would lead to $1,470 in savings over 10 years. Mostly due to a greater reduction in the risk of diabetes-related complications. This means that to get the greatest health and cost benefits, it is essential to bring time and range practices to people who are most struggling to manage their blood glucose. I totally 100% agree, Diatribe. You are right on the money.
But yes, this is very important because the more you're in range, the healthier you are in the long run as well.
That's as we mentioned in our long-term care episode.
Yes, because... you don't want to go blind because you had high blood sugars when you were 15 or 16.
You don't want to experience all of the complications that all of the old people are telling you about.
Yes. And if you
nothing against old people, I'm just saying that's usually where they come from.
No, and if you don't believe us, go talk to your grandparents about all the stupid stuff they did and the consequences that they're living out.
Not necessarily that has to do with diabetes, just stupid stuff.
Yeah. Listen to the wise people, please. But moving on, we have our question for the audience. Our question for this week is, how are your emergency and backup kits doing? Do you have the necessary supplies that you need in them? Do you at least leave the house with some low snacks? If not, completely change out the supplies. Let us know at the comments at inspiredforward.com/episode17.
And that is it for this episode of This is Type 1. Remember, you can find the show notes at inspiredforward.com/episode17. And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode, please leave us a comment or send an email. You can get straight to our podcast page by going to thisistype1.com. Our music, which is fantastic, is by Joseph McDade, and our audio wizard, who is amazing, is my husband, Tim. I'm on all social media as @inspiredforward, and our email is colleen@inspiredforward.com.
And then I'm on Instagram as @JJ_CrystalKAT. Please feel free to send me questions or comments you have about the show or about type 1 diabetes.
We are so happy to have you back, Jesse.
I'm so happy to be back. I love this.
Thank you so much for listening. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends. And please leave us a rating or review on iTunes, since that helps other people find us. And be sure to listen in next week when we talk about handling stress as a type 1 diabetic. Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you. Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face-to-face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.